It's rock and roll.
Hello, and welcome to the Look, It's Rock and Roll podcast. I'm Ken. I am your host today. And today we're going to have a special guest here with me, and that is Mark Kopernicki of the band Project Gemini. And he's going to talk about his new album that's just come out. And, thank you, Mark, for, joining us and to tell us about your new album.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you for having me on. It's going to be a great pleasure to speak with you about the new record. Whatever you have to ask, fire away, my friend.
Fire away. I will do that. Okay. Well, we can get right into it. And maybe just before we get into that, I will just show off the great artwork on this album. What's on your mind? I think you've used the same artist in the past for your other albums. Is that correct?
I've used the same guy for every single Project Gemini album cover since the very beginning, since An Ordinary Day.
Okay. Yeah, they're very elaborate and very cool. So I like this. I like this artwork with the maze and the, you have to decide which way you're going to go and find your way, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, cool. All right. So we'll get into it. Any particular reason, I guess, you chose, the album title, What's on Your Mind, and are the songs personal topics from your mind, or a combination of, what's going on in the world today, all that chaos and so on?
None of the songs on this album are personally from me. Like, they're not stories of my own personal life, but they are stories that are familiar to me, whether it's stuff I've read in newspapers or online or saw on the news, or it's even possibly could even possibly be things that I've heard from friends, stories from friends and, other family members as well. So because some of the topic matter is not, I wouldn't say it's dark, but because some of the topic matter isn't exactly positive, I'm pleased to tell you that it's not anything personally for my own situation.
No. Yeah, I was worried about a couple of things. But after listening to it, I said, I hope this is nothing about personal. Okay, cool. So what about the sound for this record? I think I can tell, it's keeping with your Project Gemini. For the most part, the sound that you've had in prior albums. Did you try to do anything differently production-wise, differently from the prior albums?
Yeah, I mean, I recorded my own studio, right? And after a while, you start getting comfortable with some of your gear, right? And you get used to certain sounds and stuff like that that you feel comfortable with, and because that's kind of an important thing. I don't know how much people realize that, but once you get a sound that's comfortable to you, you can play better, you can write better, everything, inspiration comes easier when you have a sound that you don't have to battle with. You know what I mean? That's one of the things that most guitar players or even bass players or drummers or everything always have a struggle with, is if they listen to something and they don't like the sound and they can't connect with it, it's difficult to be inspired and to play well. So I've been using a lot of the same sort of gear that I've had. I have my, Hughes and Kettner amplifier over here in the corner, which you can't really see, but, I have my mixer here that I've had, my keyboards that I've had now for a while, but I did make an effort though this time to mix things up a little bit for myself, because technology in the music world improves just as much or as quickly as well as computer technology. You'd be very surprised. I mean, back in the day, just amplifiers, people would release their different amplifiers and that would be it. But now, cloning technology and IRs, which are called impulse responses, Mm-hmm. And even just like modeling amps are very big and popular now in the music world. You know, mm-hmm. people are carrying devices like this, which is called an aux stomp, which is like a cabinet simulator, uh-huh. right? So instead of carrying a 110 pound Marshall cabinet, you can just bring this instead, which weighs like cool. you know, 2 pounds, right?
Wow.
And also another device is this here, which I've, as you can see, I've been using it because it's plugged in, is the Universal Audio Lion, which is a very identical, and I mean, it's scary because I played a 1968 Marshall amplifier at a store in Chicago called the Chicago Music Exchange, mm-hmm. and the sound of it is very specific. Like, you know, when you play that amplifier, that's that sound. And this replicates that amplifier, the 68 Super Lead, Marshall Super Lead, and it's scary how accurate it replicates it. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
And a Marshall head like that one, you know, again, that you're talking about like 50, 60 pounds to lift that stupid thing, you know, and it's, you know, it's not easy to bring around it, you know, and to have something like this instead is a kind of a step forward, especially in the recording world. I mean, maybe live people still want to use amplifiers and cabinets. And then I understand that because, you know, some people like to have the volume and the stuff on stage, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in the studio world, this is extremely helpful. So as soon as I got this, I started implementing it. And this album, I didn't use the Marshall thing yet because I'd only just gotten that recently. But this I did use, this cabinet emulator, because I have a couple of other things. Like I said, I have my amplifier over there. Mm-hmm. And I also have a couple of Line 6 devices, which are simulators of different things like Mesa Boogie amps and Soldanos and all kinds of different ones. But when you're connected with this, it brings it to a whole new level because now you have much better cabinet simulations. You can control different microphones and different volumes of microphones, and it's unbelievable. So I found that the guitar sounds on these records have improved, in my opinion, definitely. Mm-hmm. Same with the bass. And another thing that's improved too is I got myself an SSL USB audio interface here now, mm-hmm. which is, you know, SSL is like one of the biggest, you know, mixing console companies in the world. There's an interesting fact that I read on the internet saying that at one point in the 90s and 2000s, that 95% of the music that you heard on the radio was mixed on an SSL console.
Oh,
so
really?
That's pretty scary numbers if you think about it. All right. So to have that kind of sound in my arsenal is another step up in quality as well, right? Because you can do all kinds of different things now with it. You know, there's like a legacy 4K switcher where you can implement some of the tones of that mixing console into your sound as well. And the last thing that I did too is I've upgraded some of my drum sounds, you know, because I had certain drums that I was using before, but now the snare drum sounds and the kick drum sounds are so much better. Like, as time has gone, they've improved that technology as well. And I'm really pleased with the overall sound of this record.
Yeah, I think it sounds great, actually. Really clear tones and so on. So, yeah, I think it is a little of improvement over the sound from the prior albums, to tell you the truth, in my opinion, too. So, yeah, that's cool. That's good. Learning lesson for me on some of that stuff, because I'm not aware of all the gadgets that are out there for you. I guess, you know, there's a ton of them now. You've done some, you know, conceptual, most, you know, the prior albums have been, you know, concept albums, in the past. Do you consider this any type of a concept album, or just a, you know, a collection of certain types of songs, subject matter?
It's not a concept album. It is more just a collection of songs, but they have a sort of common theme. There's no story to be told here. It's just sort of a connection in the sense that what's on your mind, which is what the album is called, mm-hmm. is it's what it looks at is thoughts and memories of different types of different people. For example, the song Searching for the Light is about a longtime criminal and the thoughts that he's had while being in jail, for example.
Mm.
Okay. The song Circle of Life is the thoughts that a lot of people seem to have, I've noticed, as you go through life, where you know you have a job, for example, that you've been in at for a long time, and all of a sudden an opportunity comes to change a job, like your career. And a lot of times people, when they get to that crossroads, they're unsure of whether they should just stick with what they're familiar with and comfortable with, right, or take that risk now and go to something different, which might be beneficial to them in many different ways. But people sometimes are uncertain of that. So that's what Circle of Life is about. So you know what I mean? Like these songs are kind of all based on thoughts of different people. I mean, World on Edge is pretty self-explanatory. The thoughts of and concerns that people have with the world in general right now, how things are going around the world, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, cool. So as far as I know, you pretty much are a one-man band and played, you know, most of the or all the instruments. Did you have any other help as far as instrumentation that, you know, like in the past you've had some, you know, guests perform on your album? Did you have any this time?
On this album, there's only one guest appearance on there, and that's David Donnelly's playing bass on one song, and that is The Moment, the second song on the album. Okay. Interesting thing is that that song was written back in the year 3073, Book 3 time period, and David had played on that album as well. And even on a couple of records before, David's been on there. But that song didn't end up on that album because I already had enough material to complete the story at that point. So that one kind of got put to the side. But I really loved that song. So now it kind of appeared again, and I changed up some of the lyrics to make it more cohesive with this record now. Okay. And I'm very glad I did, because I think David did some fantastic bass playing on that song. So I'm glad that he's on the record.
That's cool. Yeah, we know David, and David's a good guy, great musician. So he got a good help there, good person. So let's talk about some songs. I know you mentioned some of the subject matter about the songs, but if we go through some of these songs, like, you know, The Circle of Life, for me, you know, listening to a song about making, choices, and you know, and where those choices lead you. Is there any, you know, deeper meaning to the song other than that? Or, you know, I know this is a good rocker that starts off the album.
I think you pretty much nailed it pretty accurately, which is interesting, because I've always said before that one of the things I always find interesting is people's interpretation of my lyrics, right? What they think it is, and you're pretty dead on with this one. It's basically about choices, and like I said before, you know, some choices are easier to make than others. Some of them are so easy people second guess them, like in the second verse of the song, you know, there's an opportunity for somebody to have a very easy life, you know, the relaxed life, you know, and people even sometimes when they have such an opportunity to do that, they sometimes start second guessing it. Oh, should I do that? Why is it going to be so easy? And they start wondering, and they overthink things, and then boom, they miss the opportunity.
Right.
All right. So that's basically what that song is about. And I wanted to have sort of a, you know, more upbeat song to start off the album, which is always helpful, you know, I think, to kind of reel in the listener. So that's why that song appears first on the album.
Okay, I'm glad I got the message on that one. Okay,
yes.
Pretty much so. All right, well, okay, the second song second song, Searching for the Light.
That's the third,
Our third song. I get for me, I was getting some vibes, at least the very beginning of the song. I don't know if it's through the whole song, but the beginning of the song. Those keyboards that you're using at the beginning has the sound of what I feel like I've heard before, like on that Deep Purple would have had in the 70s, a little bit of that. And I thought it was, you know, pretty cool. And then, you know, followed by your kind of it's a slower melodic rocker, but it's your melodic kind of bluesy kind of lead guitar at the beginning. I to me it feels bluesy to a degree. It almost reminds me of like a Lynyrd Skynyrd. I know it's not Southern rock, but it's
yeah.
It reminds me of that kind of, you know, lead. So is it, I mean, is that what you're going for and on those, at least the beginning of the song?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big Deep Purple fan, as you know. I mean, we've talked about many different albums before on the podcast that me and Ken do together, the Kiss Music Podcast, the Kiss FAQ. We've talked about lots of things, and we both love Deep Purple, and I'm a big, big fan of John Lord and his Hammond organ playing. I've always loved his organ playing, and that's sort of a, you know, tip of the hat to John Lord, because I, on this keyboard here, the one underneath this one, there's another keyboard down here, that one has some fantastic Hammond organ sounds, some of them that are like clean, like very typical sound, and then there's ones that are very John Lordish, where they're kind of overdriven and sound kind of distorted, like how he used to do.
Yeah.
And I just love fiddling around with that. And one time I was just playing around on there, and that little piece came out, and I just thought to myself, wow, that's such a catchy little piece. I recorded it, and the whole song kind of stemmed out of that. And, you know, I love blues guitar playing. I mean, Stevie Ray Vaughan has always been a big influence to me on guitar as far as that goes. And even, you know, Ritchie Blackmore, he has some great blues stylings. And same with Steve Morse, the guy who came after Ritchie on Deep Purple. And I've always been a big Steve Morse fan. I mean, he's one of those guys that can play blues but can also play like 6,000 miles an hour as well. Yeah, he has that kind of skill set, which I find very impressive. So I wanted to play guitar more to suit the song, because I mean, sure, you could go ahead and do a big ripping fast guitar solo in there, but I just don't think it would have suited it as well as doing a more laid back blues based guitar lead on there. And I'm really happy with this song. Again, this song is basically about, you know, a guy who's, you know, made a few bad choices, let's just say, and is behind bars, and, you know, he's kind of reminiscing about, you know, his time behind there and how his, you know, his family, you know, they come and see him now. Will they see him maybe in 10 years or now? Maybe they'll forget about him. You know, those kind of thoughts on his mind, you know. And so, you know, when you have that kind of topic matter, you can't exactly start playing happy music to that, right? So you kind of place the lyrics to fit the mood of the music, right? So I'm very happy with the way that one turned out, you know. And the chorus in there, I thought was pretty strong. I've always liked that chorus line they came up with. In our darkest times, we learn to fight while we're searching for the light, which is true about anything. I mean, you don't even have to be in jail to think that way. I mean, you could have you know, a situation where, you know, you find out a family member is ill, and you go to that. All of a sudden, you're very depressed about it, and then you're just trying to find your way out of the darkness again mentally, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, cool. Another song, we'll tackle each one of these a little bit.
Sure.
The Moment, which I think you mentioned earlier too. Song about, for me, you know, needing a leader, you know, someone to guide us through the troubled world, and hopefully taking control and, you know, making change or whatever in the world. So what made you write about that, you know, subject matter, about the needing a leader to follow?
Well, again, you're pretty accurate in your analyses of the lyrics. That's pretty much exactly what the lyrics were about. You know, here in Canada, and I mean, I'm sure it's like this in other places in the world, but there was a talk show here on AM radio that I used to listen to a while back, where it was like a, you know, like a bunch of those phone-in talk shows. And the DJ guy, whenever they would talk about stuff like, let's say, like internet rates, like how much people are paying for internet or telephones or telephone rates, you know, cell phone rates.
Right.
People would call up and complain, say, we pay too much and this and that. And this guy would lose it. He'd be like, you know what? We as Canadians, we're just sheep. All we know how to do is talk about it, but we don't do anything about it. We don't go and protest. We don't go out and make noise about it. Canadians are sheep. And he would like lose it, this guy on the radio, all the time. Right. So I kind of thought back to him for a minute and thought to myself, you know, maybe he's partially right. Maybe to have change happen and to have some of these things happen now, because right now, one of the big topics here is that food is very costly in Canada. Like, it's unbelievable how much a box of eggs costs. It's unbelievable. But, you know, people complain about it. But what are we doing to change it? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, in some countries, you see people marching in the streets and throwing stuff and smashing things. Not to say that you should go and do that, but some people right. take it a lot more seriously than it seems that some of our different countries do. So maybe it is time to, you know, try to find somebody, a strong leader who can mm-hmm. maybe, you know, help stem the tide of change. You know, that's kind of how I looked at that song, you know?
Yeah. Even in the, you know, the U.S. here, we need new leaders too. So I think it's happening a lot throughout the world.
So it's not just Canada then.
It's not just you guys. Our eggs have gone up too. So believe me, yes. And I eat a lot of eggs. So
okay, good. Anyway. So do I.
All right, another song, one I like a real lot is. The Little Chair. Mm-hmm. I like the break in the middle of the song a lot, mm-hmm. Where it breaks and you have a little piano. It looks like your standard kind of piano, you know, instrumentation mm-hmm. break in the middle of the song, and then it cuts over to a, you know, a lead guitar, and then. You have, following that, you have a synth, you know, building kind of synth solo, which is really cool, and, you know, it builds and builds, you know, kind of, it's building, getting higher kind of thing, and I really, really enjoyed that song. So, anything on, you know, to say about that?
Sure. I mean, that song, funny enough, when I started writing that, and what's ironic about it, I'm sure you're going to laugh about this, because whenever we have our little discussions on the KISS podcast, mm-hmm. I'm a big, I'm not going to say this hater, but a disliker of some of Bob Ezrin's work. And one of the things Bob Ezrin is known for is throwing piano in some of his music.
Right.
So it's ironic that somebody who dislikes that sort of would put piano into his own music now. But the thing is, though, the reason how that came about is I'm a big fan of the band Saga. Now, Saga has a lot of songs where they have these kind of breakdowns where they have like the piano and the guitar mimicking each other. Like they'll kind of duel within the same kind of run. Like if the piano goes, the guitar will do the same thing as well, right? Okay. So I kind of thought about that when I heard that line when I was playing. I was like, it reminds me of Saga a bit. So I kind of tried to go down that rabbit hole a bit, right? And, mm-hmm. You know, then I, with a double guitar thing, that was also kind of a thing that popped into my mind where it was kind of almost like Iron Maiden a bit with that kind of answering lead part mm-hmm. in there. And then the synth thing, you know, you can refer to that to so many things, you know, Yes, or, you know, you can even refer to like Dream Theater or stuff like that, that has mm-hmm. those kind of synthesizer lines in there as well. But Saga was really the main thing that kind of, entered my mind, because even in the verse, there's sort of like a little synthesizer thing at the underneath going like with the bass guitar, right? Mm-hmm. And that's very Saga as well, like that, you know, that has that sort of pulsating keyboard rhythm underneath. So I took, you know, a bit of influence from that, which is obvious, and I have no shame in saying that because I love that band, you know. So and lyrically speaking. This was one of those ones I always found it funny when I saw your little comment about they're saying, I hope this is not about anything for you, about you. And it's not, you know, it has nothing to do with me at all. But unfortunately, I have heard of stories where, you know, kids growing up having sort of the over-disciplinarian parent or the over-disciplinarian mm-hmm. babysitter or something, you know, and that sort of imagery of, you know, go into your room and sit in the corner. And they'll have like a chair there sitting in there, you know, and they'll turn the chair facing towards the corner. Right. Mm-hmm. So that sort of imagery entered my mind when I thought of that sort of topic. And it's funny, if you look at the album cover in the maze, there's a chair in one of the corners there. So if you look, see that right underneath that eye.
Oh, over here. Oh, there, right there. Right there. Yeah. Okay, I see it. Yeah.
So on this album cover, there's I think James, the guy who did it, James McCarthy, I think he tried to hide little hints of the album songs within like the
Easter
maze.
Easter eggs kind of thing. Yeah.
So like that's one of the little hidden objects that are in there. So yeah, so the little chair,
that's cool.
That represents, you know, the sort of dark side of growing up when some people are young. And then the second half of it kind of introduces as the person grows up that he willed himself, you know, out of it and got himself into a good headspace and realized that, you know, he can overcome those bad memories and, you know, have himself a decent life after all. Yeah.
Yeah. Happy ending. Which is good.
Yeah.
Yes. Nice. Okay, cool. All right, another one song is The World on Edge. And we're familiar with that right now, these days. Mm-hmm. The opening riff of this song reminded me of, I mean, and I don't think it's throughout the song, but it's just pretty much mostly just that beginning, and maybe it appears later on. But the opening riff reminds me of something Black Sabbath, kind of mm-hmm. Sabbath-y kind of riff. And the subject matter from World on Edge has subject matter regarding refugees, homelessness, you know, polluted oceans and so on.
Yeah.
Was the Black Sabbath thing an intentional kind of thing or just an automatic influence or did I go in the wrong direction?
No, you didn't go in the wrong direction. I think honestly, Kenny, you've been pretty accurate with pretty much everything on this record, which is very impressive. I commend you on that. Because the thing is, Black Sabbath is one of my earliest influences. I mean, when I first started playing guitar, you know, one of my earliest guitar teachers told me, he goes, listen, once you started getting the grasp of chords and, you know, knowing what your notes are and stuff like that, he said one of the albums you should maybe try to check out is go grab an album called Paranoid. You know, or go grab an album like the Black Sabbath debut. And because they're not overly complicated, it's not like trying to learn like an Yngwie Malmsteen album or something, you know. You can go and sit down, you can actually learn it. You know, like Iron Man is pretty straightforward enough and challenging enough for a new guitar player to learn. And I fell deeply in love with Black Sabbath stuff. I mean, I'm also a huge fan of the later eras too, the Tony Martin era of Black Sabbath. You know, the Ian Gillan era I like as well, you know, and I especially love the Dio era of Black Sabbath. I think it's fantastic. So if there's riffs of Black Sabbath appearing into my music or something sounding similar to it, I have no, it's no surprise to me, and I have no problems with it because I love Black Sabbath. I mean, that's one of those things where if Black Sabbath appears or if Rush appears or if Yes appears or Dream Theater appears, I have no quarrel with that because they're all stuff that's very important to my musical development. Lyrically, it's exactly what you said. You know, the world right now is pretty chaotic. I mean, you know, last year we had the Ukraine-Russia thing start, and now on top of that, you know, we had now the Israel and you know, Jerusalem thing there going on. Palestinians there going on. And it's funny because once that started up, people almost forgot a little bit about the Ukraine thing for some reason. Right. But, you know, that's still happening, too. I mean, we have a pretty tense global situation going on. I mean, I wouldn't want to be sitting on the UN Council. You know, I'd be probably pulling my hair out trying to figure out what the hell's going on here, you know. So then that's how things. And don't forget, those are world issues. Never mind, you know, issues that are happening within state or within province here in Canada. Or even within municipalities. I mean, some people have issues, big issues happening within their city, never mind the global things, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a really cool, you know, good rocker of a song. Really enjoy that one.
Great. I love
that. It's really good. Really good. So good. I'm getting the subject matter correctly. You know, I'm picking up on this stuff.
Yeah.
Surprisingly. So another, I think this is the six, you have six songs, right? Yeah. So it says six. The next one here is the Wandering Mind.
Yes.
And this is the lone instrumental on the album. It ends the album. So what did you try to, you know, go for in this song? I know the song seems, you know, it's very melodic, instrumental. Did you decide just, you know, and I don't know your songwriting approach, so maybe do the music first and then the lyrics second or whatever. Did you just decide not to add lyrics to this one, or do you, was your intent just to make an instrument?
I never went in initially with the intent of having an instrumental, because back in the earlier days, I always seemed to have at least one instrumental song on my album. Mm-hmm. And then I started liking singing so much, because singing is not my first instrument, like doing vocals. I mean, I'm a guitar player first, mm-hmm. then a bass player, and then a keyboard, and then I would consider myself a vocalist fourth. But I started enjoying singing so much more now, and I've gotten better as I've done records throughout the years now, that, you know, the instrumental thing was something that I'd only put in if I think that it's strong enough to be an instrumental now, you know what I mean? And what ended up happening was I started working on this idea, and I came up with these little interesting little notation parts, like the da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, which is a lot of single note stuff. Mm-hmm. And when I started going down that path, I realized that this could be a potential for a good instrumental song. So I put that synthesizer part at the beginning, that thing at the beginning that happens, mm-hmm. and then started from there. Now, I've said this once before, I think, on another podcast, that my instrumentals, I always tend to put at the end of the album. I've done that quite a bit. And the reason why I do that is I kind of look at my instrumentals like the ending credits music at a movie. Like when you come to the end of the movie and it starts rolling all the credits, that music that plays underneath it is how I look at my instrumental tracks. Because now you went through five songs, you've had all this, you know, lyrical stuff and all these topics that you were thinking about. And now you come to the end and it's kind of like a it's all done now. Right. And it's kind of like a chill out moment. And that's how I kind of approach the instrumental at the end.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that makes sense. And that unless you mentioned your vocals, I'm just wondering if you ever thought about deciding to going for a more, I don't want to call it screaming type vocal, but, you know, more of a raspy kind of feel to something. Like if you decided to do another album outside of Project Gemini, maybe different. And more in a rock and roll over type, mm-hmm. Instrumentation and guitars and would you, you know, I would think you would change the vocal style a little bit if you're going to do that kind of thing too.
See, the thing with the vocals, like I said before, the vocals is something that's relatively new to me compared to playing guitar. Mm-hmm. So if you were to go to me and say, listen, I need a song or a guitar solo with some tapping and this and that on there, I could do it now, like no problem, because I've been playing for 20 some odd years and all this stuff comes naturally now. The singing part of it is still something I'm learning as I'm doing now. So I've discovered, you know, that I can sing in a certain range pretty decently now. I'm finding that I could also do some pretty decent falsetto stuff now, which is starting to come into play now, which I use for my backing harmonies and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And some of the other things now, I'm still trying to figure how to work it into my voice. Like, for example, how to get a raspier tone out, for example, mm-hmm. or how to, you know, because it's funny, because I read a great story about John Anderson of Yes. He said that he wanted to get his voice raspy, because he has a very smooth, very high voice. Yeah. Right? Yeah. And he said that he wanted, it was around 1979, he said that when they were in Paris, he wanted to try to get a raspier voice. So what he decided to do, this is hilarious, he went out and started buying cigarettes and started smoking like crazy to see if that would help him get a raspy voice. And he said all it ended up doing is making him cough all the time. Right. So, you know, these things you can end up doing, like you can mm-hmm. find a raspy voice, but the trick is you have to stumble onto it and find how to do it, because you can also sing in a raspy voice and hurt your voice. You know,
absolutely.
You know what I mean? Because, oh, like, yeah, there's Cookie Monster guys who are like, they do those really low.
Yes.
If you do like hours of that, you can really screw up your throat. You know?
Tear your cords out.
Okay, cool.
I mean, because I was just thinking, you know, your vocals are, I mean, nice and smooth vocals, and, you know, I have no problem with that. But I'm just thinking, you know, I haven't heard you try to go for something, you know, over the top or whatever you want to call it. You know, because, like, you know, I'm just, as an example, like, yeah, Paul McCartney, you know how he sings his nice vocal. Every now and then he has those songs that he has that kind of that rasp, you know
what I'm talking
about, that he does. I was just kind of curious about that when you were talking about the vocals.
That's not to say that maybe it might not have, it could happen next record, it could happen two records from now, who knows.
But
you know, it's always something that I'm approaching, and I'm learning new things all the time, right?
Yeah, well, that was like, you know Ace Frehley, right? He was very, you know, if you listen to the first vocal on the lead vocal on when he did that in Kiss, and then later on, you could see how his voice got a little bit more confident and stronger, changed a bit, right?
Exactly.
It's interesting. But, okay. All right. So I think we got everything. We covered all that. Anything else you want to talk about the album before you kind of plug where you can pick this, you know, CD up? And, you know, is there going to be a vinyl version too? As there's currently a CD version out there, is there a vinyl coming too?
Yes, of course. The one thing that you can always count on with a Project Gemini release is that there will be a vinyl version of it. Of course, you know, right now there's a pre-order going on for the digital version and the CD version of it. But there will be a vinyl version as well. Now, the thing to keep in mind for all you people who are watching this and who are supporters of Project Gemini is that this time around, I'm not going to be waiting as long to do the vinyl pre-order, because the longer I wait to do it, the longer it's going to take to get the record done.
Last year
when I did this album, it took forever. It was like almost till like Christmas by the time I got the vinyl. And that's something that I don't want to do this time, because I did say before on one of my update videos that I plan to release two albums this year, two Project Gemini albums this year. And this is one of them. And the next album I already have done. It's already mixed, mastered, everything.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, it's ready. It's ready to go already. In fact, I even have a third one that's almost pretty much done as well. But, but that's the thing. And I'll get to that in a minute. But I wanted to make sure that this time I get the pre-order in, because the sooner I put my order in with Train Records, who does my CDs and vinyl, the quicker then those things can start happening, right? Because there is a waiting list, obviously, of people that are, you know, doing it. And he's told me, though, that the wait shouldn't be as long this time. He says that, but let's see what happens, right?
Yeah.
So, but I definitely gonna do vinyl. And again, keep your eyes open for the Project Gemini Facebook page, because usually what I end up doing is I'll put a little poll on there to see if what kind of colors people are interested in. I might do that again this time, or I might just pick a color myself this time. And it's funny, because one thing that people have been kind of messaging me about and just kind of, you know, leaving comments about is they're going, are you ever going to do a standard black release? Because you've done every color so far, but we've never had black vinyl Project Gemini album. And I was like, you know what? That's a good point, you know? So maybe this might be the one to do a black vinyl. We never know. We'll see, right?
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, because, I mean, look, the colors are great and it's interesting. But, you know, I have 90% of my records are all black vinyl. And that doesn't make – and it makes zero difference to me, you know, as far as listening to it. It's still, the album's good. It doesn't matter what color it is, right? So that basically what's going on. There will be vinyl, and, you know, hopefully sometime in March I can start, you know, getting that rolling as well, right? The only thing I just have to wait for is the artwork that I got for the CD. Sometimes varies from the artwork that appears on the vinyl. It's not always complimentary that way, which I really like, because sometimes the back cover of the CD will be vastly different from the back cover of the album, for example, right? Okay. Like the vinyl release. Mm-hmm. Or the booklet of the CD will have different imagery than the booklet of the vinyl release, right? So that's the only thing I'm kind of just waiting on is just those little artwork pieces. So there you go. But if you know, go onto my Facebook page. I have an Instagram as well, and you can always see stuff like that on there, and you can get updates on my YouTube channel, which is just the Project Gemini. Just type in Project Gemini, and there you go. But make sure you spell it the proper way, as you see on the screen here, P-R-O-J-E-K-T-G-E-M-I-N-E-Y-E. There's a big difference if you spell it the other way.
Sure. And did you say where you can, you know, order the CD?
The album and the pre-order and all that stuff and the vinyl, when it comes up, you get it all in one spot, which is my Bandcamp page, which is just basically HTTP. I'm sure they'll put up the link here for it. Mm-hmm. https://, projectgemini.bandcamp.com. Once you put that in there, and Project Gemini is all one word and Bandcamp is all one word. And there you go. So it's projectgemini.bandcamp.com.
Yeah, I think I've gone out to Bandcamp and I've just went to Bandcamp. And if you do a search on just the project spelled, you know, the correct way, mm-hmm. you know, the Mark's way, you'll find it right away. You'll find
the
whole group of albums that you've done. So,
yeah.
Cool.
So it's easy to find on the Bandcamp site. So go to Bandcamp and like Ken said, just type in even just the first word project and you'll find all my stuff pop up there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think we've, you know, covered everything. I want to thank you for, you know, joining. I know, you know, Mark is a host of this Look It's Rock and Roll, you know, a co-host too of Look It's Rock and Roll, but you know, he's kind of the featured guy in it this time because he's, you know, got new music out, and so we want to make sure everyone hears about that. So thank you again, Mark, for letting us know all about your new record.
And thank you, Ken, for coming on here and you know, helping out with the interview.
All right. Yeah, my pleasure. All right, everyone, that wraps up another episode of Look It's Rock and Roll. Please check us out. Hopefully we'll have some more videos coming your way. Thanks.
Thank you for watching or listening to this episode. Be sure to subscribe to us, like us, or even leave us a review. You can find us and join the conversation on Facebook.